And coming around the bend on Free Radio Santa Cruz Netcast this Sunday on January 19th, 2020, we have a variety of things. There's going to be an interview with Peter Marin of Santa Barbara, and looking more closely at the discussion Chief Mills, City Attorney Condotti, and I guess Matt Dettel of the Public Works had with the reactionary Santa Cruz Neighbors Group in their latest anti-homeless measures. I'm talking with Wes White, the video journalist who was there covering that. And more stuff, too. I'm a little under the weather still. My apologies to all you listeners if there are any of you left. And we'll do what we can, but probably been covering a significant part of this with a flashback. So, well, don't go away.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So I've just got on the line again with the activist Wes White, video journalist, mayoral candidate, legal fighter, all-around bad boy. Hi, Wes. You there?
Yes.
Oh, good. A little bit questionable reception here. So you were at a Wednesday meeting at the Santa Cruz Police Department's community room in the evening with the Santa Cruz Neighbors hosting Chief Andy Mills of the Santa Cruz Police Department, City Attorney Anthony Condotti of the, or Tony as we like to call him fondly, the City Attorney of Santa Cruz, and I guess Matt Dettel, the Public Works boss, or at least somebody high up in that staff. I'm not quite sure what his position is. And you were videoing from the side in a relatively full room, right?
Yeah, it was pretty full. Probably at least 150 people.
You know, I saw a few old faces I recognized, a few conservative people, Robert Freitas, Rochelle Naroyan, a former councilwoman, and then some, I guess, Steve Schacht, who's head of Santa Cruz Mierda, a rather hostile, really out front, anti-homeless. I don't know if it's fair to call it a smear site, but their pretty, I would call them kind of fascistic in their attitude toward homeless folks. And of course, Santa Cruz Neighbors itself, I don't have too much patience with. The chief himself, although you called them eight, I think he called it seven different points he brought up. And these included, criminalizing possession of a needle in some public spaces, specifying specifically what parts of Pacific Avenue are a park so that the infamous stay-away orders, even without a court being involved or even a charge being involved, could be brought against people and making them stay away on penalty of a year in jail and a $1,000 fine for a day or longer, a month, a week, 6 months, depending on... The third thing they brought up was criminalizing tents. This is, I should say, that Chief Mills brought up from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Throughout the city. Then there was requiring folks to carry their possessions with them during that same period of time, something that I understand Salinas is already doing. Penalizing stores for not picking up their shopping carts, mandating more limited parking times on West Side Drive, parking lots, and maybe just generally along, I think it's the parking lots they were referring to, and then establishing can sleep areas, although they didn't really get into this, and that's, I think, one of the things I want to talk about. And one of the points that you brought up is that you are even quoted by not usually very homeless activist interested journalist, and I use the term with some trepidation there, Jessica York, who writes the Santa Cruz Urinal paper, or Sentinel as they call it. She quoted you as talking about blackening out the checkerboard of places where homeless people were allowed to be, sleep at night, and even be during the day, but I guess sleeping was the issue, all of this around essentially the upcoming ordinance around sleeping or camping that has been put on hold. The current one, anyway, has been put on hold by the Martin versus Boise decision in Idaho, which was recently the appeal of that decision by the reactionary cities wanting to retain their anti-homeless camping ordinances was turned back by the Supreme Court, though I don't think in any meaningful or a reassuring way. I think they just had to do it because of other cases that they were making a decision on in a similar way. It wasn't properly put to them, or it'll come back in a different context, I'm afraid. But because of that decision, the Condotti has got this issue on the table. It's being brought up, although, ironically, this has very little to do with how police are currently enforcing what amounts to anti-camping practice, which is they're using all these other ordinances, none of which were really discussed much. I think one may have been mentioned briefly by one person. There were a couple of activists in the audience. Phil Posner was there, although Phil seemed eager to, I don't know if you'd say ingratiate himself, but give, I feel, really undue credit to Police Chief Mills for what was essentially a kind of a political rally with this sympathetic semi-vigilante group, the Santa Cruz Neighbors, trying to mobilize, I think, a platform of anti-homeless laws. I guess his supposed solution to solving the issue of homelessness, and that was solving that. He's clarified he wasn't trying to solve homelessness. He was trying to provide solutions for the inconveniences, discomforts, and difficulties that some housed people have when they see poor and homeless people in their neighborhoods or in their downtown area or even at the Ross Camp, which is pretty far removed from most neighborhoods. There are a couple of neighborhoods it's close to, but not many. Why don't you give me your general impressions, and we'll start going through these points. And I kind of want to compare them to the 8 points that Desiree Quintero, activists concerned about the death of Desiree Quintero, the Union of the Homeless Activists, brought up before the Santa Cruz City Council back in November. And, of course, they were all very ostentatiously ignored. But what was your – give me some of your impressions of that meeting.
Well, when you first started saying, you just wanted to change behavior, I was kind of all right with that. But, you know, it started out with the needles, and then it started out, with the business, downtown business. Let's call that a park. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, we're going to ban everybody from all parks. And it just kind of went downhill at that point.
No, I didn't catch that. I didn't actually pick up that he wants to ban people from all parks.
There's a thing on there where it said, isn't that, what does it say specifically then?
Well, it's a good question. I've got to admit, my enthusiasm for going over this hour and a half long discussion is limited. But, you know, I thought he talked about, making it really very clear that what is kind of vaguely designated as a under the Parks and Rec jurisdiction, which now is, of course, Police Department jurisdiction since Mills took over the Parks and Rec's enforcement section about a year and a half ago, I think, or thereabouts. I'm not sure how long ago. They have been, stalking Pacific Avenue and giving out citations and so forth along with Police Department. And The section of the municipal code which allows stay-away orders references parks and park-controlled areas, which ironically the city manager can expand at any time that he wants. In other words, he doesn't have to go to city council. I think that they may have made a small change on that when it came back to city council in the fall. But they said something like, well, you have to eventually let city council know you're doing it, so if they want to stop it, they can. But you don't have to go to them for permission to do it. And that certainly hasn't been the case for the last, well, since 2006 when it was passed, and I think a really wretched maneuver at city council. Well, it was just, city council was wretched then as it is now, still. You know, it's got a reactionary majority, even though it might have had a progressive majority if Justin Cummings, currently the mayor, had actually come through. Ignore the beeping you hear in the background. That's some... Ah, there we go. So, yeah, so anyway, I you may well be right that I think you can't ban people from parks. What you can do is...
Anywhere near the downtown area, that's for certain. Anywhere near Pacific Avenue, anywhere, you know, so the Benchlands and San Lorenzo right there, they don't want anybody along there at all. They don't want anyone in any of the parks, you know, especially Loudon Nelson, that got voiced a couple of times.
Well, I think, again, as I said, I think his purpose was, even though it does say Pacific Avenue and the area is currently controlled by Parks and Rec, it is not clear what parts of Pacific Avenue that's referenced. I think he wanted to sort of nail that down and give it from, you know, such and such an address to such and such an address. And, you know, from Laurel Street all the way down to the town clock, or maybe less.
Right. And, no, that's actually what had been suggested. He said 900 to Laurel.
I mean, it currently says Pacific Avenue, but I think he may be worried about what the courts are saying. Look, you can't, you know, if it's just this vague, you know, people have to go downtown to do different things. They have to, you know, buy. They want to be able to buy things in stores. Certainly, we don't want to stop them from funding our downtown or going to the post office or going to social security agencies or different things like that. So, I think what he's talking, he framed this whole thing in terms of offensive and abusive behaviors or shocking behaviors or inappropriate anti-norm behaviors. They were not after homeless people, he insisted. You know, we're just after bad behavior. Of course, that's what all the anti-homeless ordinances have always been introduced using that kind of language. But they, in fact, you know, almost exclusively, well, not entirely, but almost exclusively are used with respect to homeless people and street people, whether it's sitting next to a building or, you know, sitting on a bench for more than an hour or being within 14 feet of a phone booth in a seated position, phone kiosk. And we haven't got many of those left, but, you know, the whole tripwire network of anti-homeless law is always introduced that way. We're just after abusive behavior. But, of course, the general response I have to that whenever these ordinances are being proposed is, okay, well, let's show us why current laws don't deal with those issues anyway as they're already written, and also wouldn't these laws really very severely impact mainly people with Coral Street addresses or transients who are homeless, who have to be, you know, in public spaces generally because they don't have private spaces to go to generally.
Cars having spaces to park. So that's why there's already a three-day thing anyway.
So I think you can't... I think what he was talking about was making it so that certain types of behavior could be written... You could give an infraction for a certain type of behavior, and this was his big point, I guess he wants to show he's such a liberal... You could then use a stay-away order on Pacific Avenue because you've declared it a park, and you've been very specific saying, oh, it's only from such and such address to such and such address on Pacific. The rest of it, you can do whatever you want. But during that period, if you get an infraction, we get to give you a stay-away order for 24 hours. However, of course, if any of the park is... within, I think it's 100 feet, I don't know the exact number, but it's close to a school area, and I don't know if there are any schools downtown still. everything is tripled in terms of times. So it's not one day, it's 3 days. In the second incident, it's not 1 week, it's 3 weeks.
Where's that fine print?
That was passed in the fall of 2017, I believe. I could be wrong about the date. That was, you know, that was another one of the, you know, a reactionary pseudo public safety ordinance to protect the children, as they called it. So a lot of emphasis was, he led off, Mills did, with the needle mania stuff, which is he wants to ban possession of a needle in parks. He didn't say he wanted to ban...
anywhere in public, especially on public property.
On public property, unless you have a medical excuse. Although it was, there was a long segment along needles, and I wasn't quite clear whether he was limiting that to parks and school areas, because people have to, I mean, people have to be able to carry needles, for example, if they pick them up to dispose of them, let's say, or, you know, if they are addicts, to be able to take them and exchange them. They have to walk through public spaces to get there often. So he can't mean everywhere. Or if he does, it means that he's essentially abandoning the whole idea of health safety through needle exchange of any kind, which I think even the most vociferous opponents of expanded and citizen needle exchange and, you know, who are big supporters of the drug war, don't want to do. I mean, I think they would prefer to see some kind of needle exchange. But, you know, they want it very limited, strictly run, only by the county, one-to-one. Maybe they don't want any needle exchange, and they just have to say that because they're in a still kind of fighting what is, you know, sort of the dwindling sanity of the post-drug war period, if this were, as we'd hoped, the post-drug war period. What's your thought?
I think likely the latter. I think Santa Cruz really has it in, man. They have such a snitty, snobby attitude, you know, that people, well, what's your worth? You know, I mean, if you can't afford it, well, then get out. That's what I think I noticed is that an awful lot of business owners were there, too. And this is the thing I got against, I guess, a lot of business. They really can care less about you, but, you know, hurry up and pay your money and get out. Or if you ain't going to give me any money, then get out.
Well, what's
either way, you're going to go. Huh?
What's the needle situation as far as Salinas goes? How do Salinas police treat needle use in Salinas?
Well, I don't think they're trying to make it an extra citation. You know, that's what he's trying to do is add an extra point to it for a charge. And, you know, like just for the stay away effect or whatever. And whatever, to force people to rehab, I think, was this other thing, which obviously is a brainwash effect right there, because we're not caring about people, we're not really trying, so, I mean, we're torturing people off the top, and then we're trying to torture them to convince people that they just want to be tortured on top of that.
Well, I think that one of the problems with the whole rehab claims is there's very little rehab. There's some, you know, but there's not that much. There are significant waiting lists, at least in Santa Cruz. Do you have any sense of the rehab situation in Salinas?
I think it works for those who work it. You know, I mean, it's the same problem, though. I mean, everything is court-appointed, so now you've got to put a bunch of people who have no intention. So, you know, but they go because of court, so they go to Narcotics Anonymous or whatever. So in-house rehab, you know, I'm on the fence. I haven't really experienced too many people in too much of a situation, I guess, you know.
Well, what I'm wondering is what...
And dropped out, you know, but that's... you know, I don't know where all the successes are.
How many... I mean, I'm not even looking into the successes. I'm looking at how many actual facilities are available for people who even want rehab.
Good question. At least half a dozen.
And, I mean, are there waiting lists, or can you just walk right in and get into those in Salinas?
For the most part, I've found that you know, if someone wants help, there's help to be had, and so not much of a waiting list.
That's interesting, because I think we have a problem, and maybe Santa Cruz is a much bigger, you know, number of drug users or much bigger series of arrests that are going on, or, you know, I'm not sure what the story is, because what I've heard from activists here, and admittedly activists who are not the big anti-drug warriors that are the big fans of tightening up needle exchange and all this kind of thing. But there isn't much in the way of real resources available in terms of walk-in or unless you're on a waiting list for a relatively long period of time.
Well, I don't think Santa Cruz will let it happen. I mean, and between the city and the county, they keep pointing fingers at each other, but, you know, it's both of them together that aren't doing anything. So neither of them want it.
Are you saying Selena...
obliged issue where that's how come they have to say what they say in public.
Are you saying...
neither of them want it.
Are you saying Salinas has more drug rehabilitation facilities than Santa Cruz?
No, what I'm saying is the attitude is pretty well the same down here between Salinas and Monterey County, because neither of them want anything here either.
So we don't... But you don't have any clear stats about what kind of drug rehab Salinas has at the moment?
Salinas, Monterey County, you know, independent, non-profit organizations, those are the ones that, you know, and a lot of those fly below the radar, so that's why I really can't give you a solid number. But, you know, that's why they're rehab.
I mean, you did say that you thought anybody who wanted to get into rehab could in Salinas, and I don't think that's the case in Santa Cruz.
Well, I have a friend who does Salinas, Tent City, and through Salinas, Tent City, they're always praying for people and asking them if they want to go to rehab.
And we should explain, Salinas, Tent City is a group that goes around and helps people in tent cities, right?
So they drive around encampment to encampment, you know, I mean, the city does like 12 different, they got like, there's plenty of encampments around the city, and so when there's an encampment, they'll drive up on it, they'll offer food and clothes and, you know, sometimes blankets and sleeping bags and tents or whatever, but mainly just food and clothes, and then they'll also pray for people, and they'll ask them if anybody wants to go to rehab. You know, they'll drive them there, and he's usually able to hook it up, you know.
Huh.
So he's been successful at getting people to play it, but people staying, you know, I find him later, you know, it just didn't take. And a lot of it is because of the micromanagement. But, you know, in some degree, yes, a little bit of discipline, but... an awful lot of micromanagement can do a program disappointment as well.
Now, Salinas does not have the same stay-away order ordinance that Santa Cruz has, right? A cop cannot unilaterally, herself or himself, once they've issued an infraction ticket, say, okay, you have to stay away from here for 24 hours, and have that stick as a citation with a threat of a year in jail if they come back.
No, not the same ordinance, no. But I would imagine you're giving them ideas.
I've never heard of that used anywhere else in any other city. I mean, that's why I think, just as Santa Cruz led the state in setting up the anti-homeless downtown ordinances, you can't sit the sitting bans and the panhandling bans.
Mm-hmm.
So they led it in the stay away order stuff, which really came out of an expansion. It was the sick brainchild of former Mayor David Terrazas, who was on the Santa Cruz Library Board, who saw that what the library decided to do is start using a stay-away order from public libraries. If a person, say, fell asleep in the library, they'd have to stay away for a day. And if they did it twice, they'd have to stay away for a week. And he said, oh, great idea. We'll do this all over the city for everything. And the credulous... and sedulous and police compliant city council, eager to show their willingness to deal with the homeless menace, as it was then being depicted about 2013, passed that without much debate or dissent, although some of us didn't like it and spoke out against it. However, I know that in Salinas, you do have this peculiar ordinance which requires folks to carry their possessions with them from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., which is, I think it's even more restrictive than...
Well, I think ours is 7 to 7.
Well, during the day, I guess. And theirs is...
Right. And nobody's allowed in any park. So we do have a little ban of the park thing, but it is just an outright blanket. You're going to get a ticket. And...
Wait a minute. You're allowed to carry your stuff... You're not allowed to carry your stuff into a park in the daytime?
Correct. No, if you're sitting there with your stuff, no, they don't want your stuff there. You can be there alone. Yes, that has gone through. We've gone through so many cycles of this crazy brainwashing.
And you have no storage facilities such as Brent Adams' day and night storage has here.
No, nothing to that point at all. This is a lot more spread out. So, I mean, basically handles one neighborhood. And, Dorothy's neighbor, the Learning Center, used to have a storage program for a while. And they used to have this thing, Slave Flight. They'd give you the tent to use overnight, and they'd also give you a bin to store stuff. I mean, you know, we've gone through plenty of program, but the biggest thing is having permission to be somewhere. That's first and foremost, and you can build a foundation and support around that. And then that way we're not constantly getting blown out every time, and we can actually make something actually happen.
And the only place that homeless people are actually allowed to be on a semi-permanent basis is Soledad Street, or so-called Chinatown, next to the Dorothy's Place Social Services, right?
Right. As long as you're on the sidewalk, the right-of-way is the only public space that you're allowed to be is on the sidewalk. And our president Rita Acosta, she ended up getting a ticket for being on the sidewalk, and that was called trespassing.
Now we talked to Rita, I guess 2 or 3 weeks ago. Whatever happened to that protest that she was doing with another woman, and what happened to that citation?
Well, she did the protest until they did the sweep, and when they did the sweep is when they gave her a ticket. So she took the ticket and then moved.
Hmm. So where does she sleep at night now?
Well, she's kind of couch surfing at this point, I think, and then staying outside the other nights.
Huh. And I know that, of course, there was a serious issue around the Sherwood Park people who actually fought in court to try unsuccessfully to get an injunction, and there was some talk that they would try it again using a different technique. What's happening with that?
We haven't really done any new lawsuits. It's really frustrating, but we have done this thing with the Leadership Council, the Coalition of Homeless Service Providers that facilitates the Leadership Council for the continuum of care within our two counties, which Salinas is a partner of, supposedly, in quotes. They did a draft position on encampments. So basically, I think they got 4 points on there. If the city is going to post a notice, then they have to cite the specific health and safety concerns of that encampment, and then provide whatever dumpsters and porta potties. And a chance for the encampment to mitigate those issues themselves.
Now let me actually ask. That's in the abstract. That sounds peachy. Maybe. I mean, it sounds better than you might think. But what's actually the current police practice?
I understand that, but what I'm talking about is building pressure to it.
I'm asking.
I know where it's at.
I understand.
I'm trying to get to a better place, and I think this is going to be a good vehicle to do that.
I'm asking, what is the current police practice?
What are you doing here? Get out of here. Don't you know you're not supposed to be here?
So, in other words, there is no toleration of homeless encampments in Salinas right now, except perhaps along the sidewalks of Soledad, maybe some other sidewalks?
Well, it's at will. So whenever they have time and they ain't got nothing better to do, then they'll come over to the parks and pick on people.
Now, Chief Mills in Santa Cruz insists that they only do this, ticketing using the alternate ordinances that they're using instead of camping because they're afraid of lawsuits under the Martin versus
right,
Boise
but
case.
But he insists.
Hang on a second. Mills insists that this is only gets done on complaint by the citizenry. What does your police chief say? I understand we spoke with her briefly at one time some months back.
Complaint happens all the time because they have a standing order if you call in. I mean, at Sherwood Park specifically, there's a security guard group, and of course they're supposed to call every time they see anybody staying, so that's their duty. So it's a setup to whatever they already want to do.
So are you saying that the Salinas police don't require a citizen's complaint to issue a citation to a homeless person for, well, let's say, sleeping in public?
Can I prove that? No, but would I assume that? Yes.
And the basis of your assumption is that
is the Russian heartache, especially. I mean, you look at all these videos that we've done, and you listen to the demeanor and the attitude, the unprofessionalness of how they respond to any kind of question at all. So where are we supposed to go? Well, I don't care. That's not my problem. Why don't you just get out of town? Why don't you? How come you don't have a job? You know, just rude, obnoxious, unprofessional. You know, no way. They're not here to serve anybody.
Does anyone actually
tell you? We need to make it a rough experience. Maybe you'll leave town and go to another place.
Does anyone actually ask the cop, "Did you have a complaint?" Is that ever a part of these videos that you've made?
Not specifically, but it has been volunteered, you know, as far as the officer's response as to why they're there.
Because I know here in Santa Cruz, even though they claim that they're doing it on complaint, Mills makes that a big issue, and I think he said it, he may have said it even at this occasion that you visited and you videoed on Wednesday.
Well, I would imagine that's more CYA than actual fact, because I would imagine it's just a standing order, just the same way as you said, you know, they've already have stuff on file from all the business.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true or not. I can't tell, and I can imagine any number of things, and, you know, I probably do all
right.
The time.
But
you know, what I understand, though, is they are occasionally training rookie cops by bringing them around to give some of these obnoxious citations. So, for example, the man who recently died on the street sleeping at the post office encampment, Jerry, Andrea's father, people who you may remember him. I don't know if you ever met him, but you probably heard about him when you came to town. He died a couple weeks ago. And he and Andrea were given citations, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago for being next to the phone kiosk, one of the few working phone kiosks in Santa Cruz downtown area that's next to the Food Not Bombs meal at the main post office. You're probably familiar with that kiosk.
Yes.
And it's, I don't think there was, I was audioing the whole thing and actually commenting on it somewhat abrasively because it pissed me off. And I then played that later on the air. I don't recall there being any discussion of a complaint, and these were two officers. So Mills' claim that things are done by complaint may well be theoretically, or even it may be true, but in fact it seemed like they were training officers and running around training rookies on how to give citations. And that, you know, the latest victims, the unpaid volunteers in this situation were the homeless folks that got to get all these tickets so the cops could hone their skills.
Yes, it happens. It occurs everywhere. I've noticed that, and Salinas is no exception.
So, again, going back to the Wednesday meeting, another thing that came up was penalizing stores for not picking up their shopping carts. I think this is not one of these things that Mills has picked up from some other cities. I think...
Right.
I don't know if
Salinas charges $50 to the grocery store.
Who does? Oh, Salinas does?
Yes.
And how's that working? Are grocery stores...
That's part of the fun of the sweeps.
Tell me more.
Because you're making $50 a cart, plus you're hauling all this stuff. It's a lucrative opportunity for the management of Smith and Enright.
Well, as I understand it, the management simply would be charged $50 if they didn't pick up the shopping cart. Is that correct?
Well, for Salinas, you know, for every cart that they pick up, they try very earnestly to identify those carts as to which store they came from, and then they fine the store at $50 a cart.
I see. So the police,
you know, like every every sweep, they've got an inventory of how many CVS and Food Max and. You know, so and then they just send them all a bill. Hey, guess what? We found these. Here's a picture.
Now, that's another example, in Santa Cruz at least, where I've not seen, and maybe they will have this information if they ever come to City Council, and Mills has said he won't bring these proposed ordinances to City Council until he's gone through a March series of community engagement sessions or whatever he wants to call them. But he also, at least what I heard from your video, but he also, I guess, he didn't present any data by saying that, let's say last month we picked up 50 shopping carts, we picked up 5 shopping carts. He did mention that...
Right. Well, it's another targeting aspect, because what they're trying to do is take away anybody's transport of possessions. And then, you know, you haven't gotten there yet, but they want to do a 2.5-3 hour parking limit along a lot of roads where let's not
let's not jump there yet. Let's look at this shopping cart thing. I mean, you know, we can't show that their motivation is specifically to. I mean, it would seem it probably is.
My view.
You can't. In other words, you might. Their excuse is that this is illegal behavior, it's theft, and also it's blocking the sidewalk. It's leaving these things all over town. We don't like. Although, of course, they don't mind leaving these jump bikes all over town, which is kind of interesting. that's their pretext. And the issue I always point out, again, I'm looking for these little, you know, I don't know, we call them picayune details, or I think, you know, substantive concerns. Where's the evidence of a big, massive problem that requires a new ordinance, whether it's criminalizing...
How about there's 800 people outside? Isn't that enough to scare you?
No, it doesn't bother me. I'm very comfy in my little warm place far away, so I don't have to worry about that. And I imagine Chief Mills doesn't either, except he gets, you know... phone calls and things like that. But the fact is, you know, all these ordinances, you know, like criminalizing possession of a needle in public spaces is his way of supposedly addressing the endless drumbeat of hysteria and fear, or at least political passion around the issue of badly discarded needle waste. even though the city of Santa Cruz has not put in Sharps containers. It's not put in Sharps containers. And, you know, that, of course, if you really wanted to get rid of needle waste, that's what you do. I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you just said. You want to repeat that, Wes?
Yeah, I was saying that you pretty well hit it, though. Basically, those 5 community meetings, they're rallies. They're pro-recall rallies. I mean, you know, Donna Myers was also there at the meeting right next to Rochelle Renora and...
Did anybody, I guess I didn't hear the recall mentioned at all at that meeting, did you?
No, nobody mentioned it specifically, but it certainly, you know, they all have complaints, and they all kind of groaned and nodded and chuckled.
We're talking about the recall of 2 council members, Christopher Crone and Drew Glover, which was largely funded by out-of-town anti-rent control money left over from the anti-measure, what is it, Measure M campaign of last year, or the year before last. So I guess I kind of run through a lot of this stuff. There's also this, there really wasn't a much of, you mentioned in your summary they want to establish canned sleep areas outside the city, so the city can be declared a no-sleep zone. That was what City Attorney Condotti did say, that we could find, you know, we could make it a crime to camp as we have in the past if we could give people places to go. But, of course, you can't really give people places to go in the county outside the city. That would not immunize the city from lawsuits, because the city itself has to have places to go. And he himself said, you know, we need to have places in the city for people to go, but goodness gracious gosh, we've looked so hard, we've got magnifying glasses, we've been running all over town, and we just can't find any place for people to go, even such a thing as a vacant field next to Highway 1, where they were all stashed last winter, i.e. the Ross Camp. So, you know, one doesn't have to, you know, have a very high moral sensibility to see the outrageousness of this, but it is not, I'm trying to clarify what exactly was being proposed by Mills, and I suppose he's going to modify it as he goes from group to group. You had said you thought it was your impression that they want to make it, you know, drive all the people out of the city and say there'll be no sleeping in the city, period. I'm sure that may be a motivation, but obviously they can't explicitly do that. And therefore, what their current pretext is, we're working really hard to find camping spaces. I think the city manager Bernal is saying something similar, including, goodness gracious, providing two parking spots for people to park in the police parking lot. It's not to mention that the police department actually has, 15 or 20 spaces, or at least 10 or 15 spaces vacant at night. So they could do all kinds, if they wanted to, they could set up a more significant thing. But this sort of piecemeal, well, I do allow the occasional nigger into my business, sort of thing.
Exactly.
It's really disgusting to me, and it's transparent. What's really ridiculous is that nobody calls them out on it. Now, you did. You were one of the few people, and I guess James in the Sunshine, as he calls himself, was another fellow sitting in the front row who talked about everybody could love each other, and wouldn't it be nice? And he tried to express some of the concerns homeless people have. The only other homeless person I heard talking there, although there were some homeless people in the audience, was a soft-spoken woman, African-American woman, who was praising the police department in the manner of Phil Posner. You may remember her.
Yes.
It's often, I think, a kind of part of the Stockholm syndrome here, that people who are being essentially abused by these folks feel they have to praise them if they get anything from them. I'm not quite sure what Posner or this woman, whose name I've forgotten, although I interview her frequently, regularly, she's in line at the Red Church on Mondays, what she was praising. I guess the thing that Phil Posner was praising was, and he's an activist with Conscience in Action, when it was active, I think it's kind of dispersed, or it's moved to different quarters. That's what I heard from Phil. He's not meeting with Huff anymore. He claimed he wants to go and talk privately with council members and get some action, whereas...
What in the world? Are you kidding me? I'll be waiting.
Yeah, that's his thought. And I told him, good, go for it. I mean, I'm skeptical. I don't think it's, likely. I mean, I'm still waiting to get that golden phone call, or maybe that brass phone call from Mayor Justin Cummings, who... recently promised publicly at a Tuesday city council meeting that he would be phoning me the next day to arrange or emailing me the next day to arrange a meeting time, not because I have any particular hope that we're going to get anywhere in a meeting, but just as a matter of proper form, and also because I do a free radio interview when I can with incoming mayors so that they can establish exactly what their positions are. I think Cummings is a pretty shifty character, In the sense that he's deceptive, but more in the sense that he has been taken under the wing by former mayor Cynthia Matthews, and has become a part of this reactionary minority, while at the same time wanting to preserve his credibility with students and others that he's somehow some kind of progressive. He carries a sign in strikes on the campus recently, for instance, and he occasionally votes to extend oral communications, not usually, and he was cutting off people less frequently than the former Mayor Watkins was, although he had to be pressured into allowing Brent Adams to speak on Tuesday when Brent was shamelessly smeared by three council members and the city manager, who also just... declined to provide the documents that they were operating out of, claiming that Brent had bad relations with his staff, and he had bad relations with his own workers.
Wow.
And I've got all kinds of criticisms of Brent Adams and, at different points in our career. That's fine.
That was the only kind of block they could imagine.
But in fact, I don't have any, and even the people who are critical of Adams, we like his services, but we're going to make damn sure we don't fund them, is kind of what they kept saying. And I guess this is sort of a riff on Phil Posner's decision to try to contact council members off on his lonesome, which, you know, I encourage everyone to, you know, if you want to spend your time talking to the council members, that's fine. I think there are more productive things to do in larger groups of people. If you're going to contact a council member, do so in a loud voice in a public meeting where they can't shut you down with a threat of arrest, which would be like outside the city council chambers. You know, or follow a council member around with a big sign saying, "Hey, you asshole, why is the winter shelter still closed and people freezing and dying outside?" You know, I mean, something that might actually, you know, embarrass them and also educate others who are watching, rather than delude yourself that, oh gosh, I'm chatting with people in power and that's going to get me somewhere, which I think is a sad form of, well, self-delusion, as I said before. So, say that again.
You should just run and take his council member seat back.
Yeah, well, I know that's your strategy, and I've told you what I thought of that one.
But that seems like he'd be better suited to do it that way than what he's trying to do right now, go it alone and get patted on the head, and he likes it. I don't know why.
Well, the problem with going into the city council itself, as I've told you, is it corrupts you, even if you don't want to be corrupted. Hence it is that Drew Glover, who continues to occasionally speak out at the city council, is still seriously muted because of these recall efforts and because of the censure efforts and because of his determination to try to work within the procedures and processes of the city council. It necessarily becomes a corrupting influence. You believe you have to follow rules that are unreasonable, that have nothing to do with the real needs of people. And moreover, instead of spending your time organizing people outside, you're spending your time appealing to bigots in the broader community, or people who are powerful and have real powerful voices, or who are influencing other people on the council that you then have to influence if you want to get the sacred council majority. And in fact, even if you do, you have to run it through the staff. And the staff is run by a reactionary, institutionalized old guard that is not going to change until it gets kicked out. And you might say, oh, well, we just run for city council. We got 4 votes. And then, 4 or 5 months into the council term, because you have to wait that long before you can kick out the city manager and the city attorney, I believe, you vote them out. I don't know about Salinas. That's what I think is the case.
They got like a 3-year contract. And even if they were to have a thing, they're severance space their entire contract.
I mean, that's the problem with this kind of trying to work within the political system. But, you know, there are those who do it, and there are those who try to do it and work outside. And the real issue is, to me, I've often said this, of anybody who's running for city council, what are you going to do when you get defeated? And the day after you're defeated, what are you going to do on these same issues? And, you know, they look at me aghast. You can't talk about me being defeated. I'm running for blah, blah, blah. And we'll get this from people who, you know, claim to be liberal and progressive, and African Americans like Simba Kenyatta were running around with this kind of, you know, they get, you know, they, and even Steve Argue didn't like this idea when he was running for city council, you know, and I would suggest, what are you going to do the day after? And the answer with people like Argue is he will keep working, or did in those days. He's not been too active in local politics recently. That's not been happening with him. But, you know, that's really not an issue. But I'm hoping that Drew, whether he gets recalled or not, and I hope he isn't, there's an anti-recall action, that a meeting that happened at the Palomar, I guess it was last night, or I should say it happened on Friday night, for folks who are listening to this show on Sunday morning. It was a crowded room of supporters of Crone and Glover, who are, you know, distributing yard signs and, you know, fighting the recall. But this is, you know, done suddenly 2 months before.
Yeah, not much prep.
Instead of 6 months before, which is when they had the chance to do it. But their strategy was to be very kind of, you know, low key, you know, let's pretend it isn't going to happen. And that way, you know, and this strategy, plus, of course, the H word isn't being used much. The homeless word, which is, of course, the entire wedge issue that the other side is using. And unless you face it directly and strongly and clearly, I don't think you're going to get anywhere with any kind of counter argument. I mean, really, I continue to believe, and again, this is without a lot of documentation, that it is the attempt to destroy a potential rent control majority that is the real motivation behind this recall. That is to
really?
Say, yeah, I think that they're afraid that, you know, because Cummings remains in the catbird seat. He remains the key vote on the city council. And if enough pressure is suddenly being put on Cummings to take back the rent control issue, which he was elected on, he will do it. And that means if Glover is in power and still on the council, it'll pass. To the horror of corporate money evolving around real estate in Santa Cruz. And, you know, since a lot of the money is coming from that out-of-town campaign, I think that was shown, although I'm still not entirely clear on this. So, if I'm wrong, please, all you critics, let me know. 423-4833 is the number to give me a call at, and I'll publicize it in the next show. That's what I think is going on. But I think that one of the most annoying, although, you got to laugh because you know that it's really going on, about this meeting that you went to and you videoed on Wednesday with Mills is his claim to be working for solutions.
Maybe toward the final solution.
The claim that he's somehow trying to help homeless people in some way. I mean, he didn't focus on that much, and you pointed out that the H word wasn't used much in that whole discussion. But in fact, it did come up, for example, when he talked about parking spaces at the police department. You know, he's got two parking spaces. That was his response to your, you're shutting down.
That was pretty weak, dude. That was pretty weak.
It was.
Not even two people. Come on, man.
It was not just weak. It was. I mean, he was not. It's insulting, and it's also all the proposals are all restrictions. Whether we're talking about criminalizing possession of needles, declaring Pacific Avenue a park so to facilitate stairway orders, criminalizing tents during the daytime, requiring folks to carry their possessions from 7 to 10, penalizing stores for not picking up shopping carts, mandating more limited parking times on Westcliff Drive parking lots, I guess that's only 6 points. I'm not quite sure I even got the seventh point. But
I thought I heard him say eight at the very beginning, but I could be wrong.
I think he said seven. I was at the beginning, but you could be right. You know, I'm not sure. I know that there were 8 points that were presented by the Union of the Homeless to the City Council after the death of Desiree Quintero and the destruction of Camp Phoenix. A moratorium on the enforcement of all laws criminalizing the homeless, such as being in a closed area, trespass on public property, blocking sidewalks, illegal lodging, and public nuisance. Dismissal of all pending charges against persons forced to break those laws in order to survive. Opening of the Civic Auditorium and other public buildings vacant at night as emergency shelter. None of that, of course, has been done. Public disclosure of all vacant city-owned, city-controlled, and tax-delinquent properties and their designation as available emergency housing for the homeless. And then a moratorium on the eviction of low-income renters. Again, an attempt to draw in a larger number of folks who are ultimately facing homelessness. Full compliance with legal requirements of Martin versus Boise, that prohibits enforcement and enactment of laws targeting the homeless, which actually is kind of a repetition of the first point. You don't use other laws that are actually the same kind of law. Acknowledge the legitimacy of Homes on Wheels parking in industrial zones. Add sanitary facilities and trash pickups. This is something I think that is ultimately they're going to have to try to do something like this because of the addition.
Limited basis rather than trying to satisfy, I'll be jealous. Anybody would trade with you in a heartbeat. I mean, it's absurd to be
well because you have
some people's going to be served
because you have because you have a coastal commission that has already essentially said you're going to have to give us stronger evidence before we will allow a citywide ban on RVs at night. In the coastal zone, parts of the city anyway, they're going to have to present more solid evidence that there's a real crime problem. And see, that of course, is the basic mythology that they use, but they don't document because there, I don't think there is. They can show that there's bike, you know, bike thefts, and they can show that there's bike sales, I suppose, in some groups, and they can show that there's drug use. But the notion that this is somehow a major threat to the community in some way, rather than just a form of, you know, kind of sordid, grim economic activity by people who are very poor and people who are who medicate themselves, it doesn't really have, you know, it doesn't really fit the bill as being a huge crime wave, unless, of course, you know, you buy into the drug hysteria, which some do, of course. The fourth point of the Desiree Quintero demands, as they were called, was, and this is not was not mentioned at all by Mills, none of these demands were, of course, but the issue wasn't even mentioned, was restoring rights to those at the 1220 River Street, providing showers. Now, showers did get ultimately provided, I think in part because of pressure from activists like yourself and others. Drinking water, free access for those who make 1220 River their home, and respect to civil rights of those at the city-run camp. Now, it's the, people have been moved to the armory, I understand now. And do they have that kind of access? I do not know. They probably have the same problem at the armory that they've had there, that they can't walk up, they can't bike up, they can't drive up. Maybe able to bike up. Maybe that's a possibility, because people were allowed to bike to and from, and some were allowed to walk to and from the 1220 River Street. I talked to one of the activists, I think Maria, her name was, not an activist, she was just simply a resident there. We interviewed her, you may remember, the first day we came there and talked to some people through the fence. You may remember that. I think you were you were videoing when a bunch of us came and stood outside and demanded that the people at 1220 have rights and services. And what we got instead, and she apparently now has been allowed to walk outside, or was for a period of time. We actually ran into her down at the park when we were meeting some weeks ago. We also had the Quintero demands included ending the seizure of homeless people's personal survival property, and that was brought up. I think it was mentioned at the meeting. I think somebody mentioned it. I don't know if you mentioned it. I think you may have, and somebody else mentioned it. Did you remember? I don't think Mills had a good response to that. I don't think he had any response to that, in fact, that I remember. Do you?
No, I can't think of it offhand as a
react to it, sorry. That's okay. I know that I have sent Mills a series of the concerns that we brought to the police department a month ago when 10 of us came and made requests to talk to the specifically about expanding hours to normal business hours when you could pick up property. Now it's only 6 hours a week at the Santa Cruz Police Department. What's the story in Salinas picking up property that the police have seized?
I do think they have specific days, maybe Tuesdays and Thursdays, maybe for a three-hour window. So, you know, it is hit and miss, and it's really unfair and kind. I remember at one point they were asking, you know, for the Asian culture experience there was a big shindig there on Soledad Street. And they're like, yeah, everybody's going to have to go. And I'm like, okay, well, how about, can you, like, drop off storage bins and then bring them back? You know, because that would probably work well. And they're like, no, that's basically everything goes in the garbage. You know, they didn't say that, but it was turned down, the ask request.
And that, so it's interesting. It sounds like the Salinas Police Department has a similar severely limited access to property that, if any of it is ever taken to the police department or held there. And I encourage you to find out about that, because I'd be curious to know what's going on with that. Maybe I should call the Santa Elena's Police Department and find out, but I'm too...
No, you call the Public Works Office, so they'll know better.
No, okay. Well, if you happen to call them, because I think it's unlikely that I will call, but you never can tell. I might...
it's at the bottom of all these notices. In fact, you should get on the list for these notices in Salinas, because they come a mile, you know, like twice a week. And they're doing like a dozen spots a time.
Well, the other thing, just kind of, again, contrasting the Quintero demands that we made to City Council, and I think that really none of them were addressed at all. And I think they were also presented to the Catch, and the Catch, I guess when the Catch spoke to the presented its report to the City Council at the last meeting in December, all they got was they weren't even on the agenda except as a presentation, and all the city manager said was, in January we'll put it on a future agenda. But of course in January they put nothing on a future agenda, and it's now going to be put on a future agenda. I think it's the second meeting in February, maybe. I guess the one thing they did was the only action that I've heard about is showers were put into 1220, and this was not part of our demands, but it's a better thing in some respects and not so much in others. For the pickup for the Laurel Street shelter, which is the only actual walk, you can't walk to it, but you can walk to the bus, and if there's room on the bus, you can get in the Laurel Street shelter, which I think it has capacity of 40 to 60 people. Although it's got various problems if you talk to people who've been there, like Cherie Peterson, who's one of the activists who comes to Huff meetings, outspoken and, bless her, very, very strong in her opinions. And she's over 70, and she's, nearly blind, and it's... she struggles, but she's used the shelter, and it's doesn't have a lot of friendly things to say about it, but, you know, it's out of the rain. And she was able to get a delay on the seizure of her vehicle, which is not properly registered, so it can't be. The minute it gets removed from the church parking lot where it's currently parked, she will be faced with all it being taken away, or at least the threat of its being taken away. One of the things we were looking for was to get Drew Glover's original proposal from a year ago to authorize private entities to establish campgrounds, sponsor portable toilets, also to provide 24-hour access to public bathrooms at Soquel, Locust, restore access to Loudon Nelson bathrooms. Of course, that has directly been turned down by not just the City Council, but the Catch Committee, supposedly the great homeless advisory committee, which seems to say, you know, go piss in the bushes outside Loudon Nelson, and that's what people do.
Right.
Actually, I don't think
right.
They piss...
No, they've been sitting on it the whole time, dragging their feet. They don't even know what they're doing. They're hardly even chasing their tail, let alone, you know, looking for it.
Well, I think actually homeless people are more unduly courteous and respectful, or maybe they recognize they have to not pollute their own environment. They use, you know, pee bottles and things of that sort.
Well, I don't know. What about trying to drive in a group of people to get in there and talk about, you know, you need bathrooms and showers and dumpsters, and you need a place to be, you know, because seriously, this Catch apparently is the vehicle, and you may as well fill it full, flood it, you know, I mean, that's...
Well, I think that's been tried. That's been tried. They didn't listen, and the Catch only doesn't really have homeless people on it, with the exception of it has two bourgeois advocates for the homeless, Rafa.
No, they're very middle of the road over there. They're far too comfortable. They're just not interested. They're disinterested. They don't realize this is life and death. They're like, well, I mean, how long have they been in business now? And what have they actually done?
Well, you don't have to convince me, but Rafa and Serge are people who will talk about the issues, who will attend all the protests, and unfortunately, who also Serge particularly
observe.
Serge has not been particularly.
No, I said observe, just to observe, though. I mean, that's not enough.
No, and it's also they've interrupted too. Not Rafa, but Serge has. When somebody, I keep bringing this up, when someone asked at the homeless memorial for the reading of the dead that we did in December on the sidewalk at the Food Not Bombs meal, where people could go tonight, I said, oh, well, we have the Catch here, Serge and Rafa.
Right.
You know, I asked Rafa, and Rafa, where can people go? And instead, Serge immediately grabbed the mic and said, this is an inappropriate question for this kind of a meeting.
Exactly.
People can talk to me later.
A very real question.
This is not merely standing aside and watching. It is deliberately sabotaging what's going on in order to maintain a right-wing sort of conservative, everything's okay, leave it to us mentality. Although I suppose Serge would say no, he wants to respect the dead or some such thing.
I'm sure they felt put on the spot. So,
well, that was the whole point.
They respond to that because they've been lethargic the whole time.
You always put them on the spot because that's their job. Their job is to address these issues, not to pretend they don't exist, not to put them off and talk about them privately in hushed voices.
I hear you.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm arguing with the absent people. And although I got to tell you, I've learned a lot from those two as well, because they are a source of information for Huff and for when it was operating Conscience in Action. I kind of have reached the end of my wrap here, but I'm sure I'm missing stuff. Is anything coming up in Salinas that we should be aware of?
I think on the 28th we're going to go to the Capitol and talk to Steinberg directly. Co-chair for the Coalition on, or the Commission on Homelessness for the state of California. Him and Gavin Newsom together want to talk about a right to shelter state and how to force everybody into a place. So they're dangling money to entice jurisdictions to put people away. Any which way you know how, because if they're not on the street, I'll give you money. So that's what we'll be there on the 28th, which is a Tuesday for the city council meeting. And this leadership council is next week. On the Wednesday, we're going to go to Hollister, and of course, we'll be talking about this draft position paper the leadership council, the Coalition of Homeless Service Providers drafted. Because, their partner in the city of Salinas needs to get told what for. Last time we came there in force, and so the Sunday I wrote in, and the Wednesday we had the meeting, and the Friday there was 35, city, county, state, and federal officials all in one room saying city of Salinas quit doing the sweeps. And, of course, the city's like, well, I don't care. So they're still doing it. I'm trying to get the year's worth of sweeps on a just a zip file, so then I can put it on a spreadsheet as to location and date and just X all the way across, and you're gonna find that the frequency on these things is horrible.
That sounds good.
It's fun money. Have you
been able to get any student interns to help you, because that's I think what you need.
Correct. Well, no, the heart and drive is pretty difficult, and I guess I don't know where to fish, maybe.
I hear you.
At this point, not yet, and which kind of goes with this mayor stuff, because the mayor thing is about driving up issue. If I win, then maybe I can actually drive the car, and we can make this go a lot faster.
Yeah, right.
It's about driving the issue,
all these crappy government meetings don't interest me worth a shit, frankly. But what interests me is whether the Union of the Homeless or the homeless groups you have in Salinas are actually meeting and forming connections with each other. And that is the issue. I remember for 3 or 4 years ago, you and Anthony Prince and homeless folks were, actively challenging ordinances and so forth and organizing. Is that still happening?
It's threaded throughout the encampments, I guess, but nobody wants to meet on a regular basis. It's not an addiction anybody's used to. Mm-hmm. So, they'll get a taste of it. When we had the flagpole, that was our largest draw. Ever after, not so much, because the encampments keep on getting blown out. So what the fuck do you really do anyway? You can't fucking help me. Then that's the attitude. Well, I'm sorry, I can't really do that much.
We attended one of your meetings, where the court proceeding where you did lose the case on Sherwood Park. But there was this pep talk by Anthony Prince afterward, the bric-a-brac-a-fac-rac-a-sis-boom-bah, where, he was talking about the next round. It was only the beginning. We're only organizing. How's that going? I know there have been connections with Sacramento activists, with activists Raylan Butcher and Brian Brown up in wherever.
Well, we've been growing new chapters. Lucero's been planting more seeds, so we've got like almost a dozen chapters now. We're flourishing in some respects. And in Salinas, our relationships are pretty deep. But, you know, hardly anybody knows each other. The group dynamics are very difficult if you're just on foot all the time.
I understand.
So, you know, going from one camp to another, going to a meeting is very difficult. So, I mean, that's basically the only way to do it is just like Salinas and Sand City, you know, just going to encampment and talking to people and call them on the phone or somebody hits me up, hey, dude, we just got a notice.
And we have the same problem in Santa Cruz. I know that you mentioned that Rita Acosta, who was doing the challenge of the sidewalk protest, going to court on her citation. Is there going to be any action around that?
Both her and Mike are going to plead not guilty, take it to trial. So yeah, there's some, and there have been supporters already coming. You know, like when the last court date was, I was there, and a couple other people wanted to make it, and one other person did go. You know, so they're checking in. You know, throughout. So you know, people are concerned.
When's the next court date? You know?
I'm sorry?
The next court date?
Let's see. I tried looking at Mike's earlier and I couldn't find it. And, let's see. Rita's next court date is February 6th at 8:15 in the Salinas courthouse.
And what kind of a hearing is that?
It's going to be, I guess, for pleading. I think it might even be an arraignment because she just got a ticket, so she may have to plead guilty, not guilty at that point.
So she hasn't had a hearing yet?
Correct. And she got a citation, and she has to go to court on February 6th, and then the process can start at that point.
Okay, well,
CRLA. And so
California Rural Legal Assistance. California Rural Legal Assistance. Mm-hmm. Well, that's all I've got. Is there more that you've got that you want to talk about?
No, I mean, people need a place to be. That's first and foremost. And until we're talking about where people can be, we're not talking about solutions at all. Well, maybe it's about the final solution, but those are not real solutions.
You know, I want to thank you, Wes, for, you know, your most recent videoing of both Paul Bowden's discussions with us last Sunday, and also this thing on Wednesday of the latest get him out of town stuff from Mills and his gang. It's frankly, I wouldn't be having this conversation about this issue probably in the depth, and perhaps it's too deep and it's sticking in the mud, but that we're having if it hadn't been for that videoing. And you do good work, and I have differences of opinion on some of the effectiveness of the road you take, thank you for doing what you're doing, man.
Sure. Are you going to the thing tomorrow?
Well, I have a problem in that I'm sick, but I'm trying to hang in there. We'll see how it goes tomorrow. I mean, I would assume so, even if I'm not feeling too well, but we'll see. For those who are, by tomorrow, of course, you're talking about today as in terms of this podcast.
Sunday.
There actually is if you're listening to this on Sunday, the 19th at 5 o'clock, there is a rally to consider what to do on Martin Luther King Day the next day, which is Monday, tomorrow, if you're listening on Sunday, which is, there's been some things floated around ranging from taking over a vacant building in the fashion of Moms for Housing in Oakland, to setting up a new Camp Phoenix, to, I don't know, wandering over and serenading people at the city manager's office, although since all the offices are closed on Martin Luther King Day, I'm not sure how effective that would be. But yeah, we're going to be talking about that tomorrow, right later today at 5, if you're listening on Sunday.
So.
Will you be there, Uncle Wes?
I'm considering it.
Well,
there's a good possibility, I suppose.
I'm not saying you don't feel guilt-tripped or even pressured. Continue to do what you're doing and keep me informed.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right.
Take care, man.
All right, you too. Have fun.
Bye-bye.